Tony, thanks for being on the show today.
A pleasure to be here.
So how does the collective trauma of lockdown fatigue affect different generations?
Well, we have data from the Australian Bureau of Statistics, which has been tracking our mental health during the COVID lockdown period. And when we were in the first period around April, they found anxiety went up a little bit, but nothing too dramatic. And then by June, it had come down to the level it had been for many years. But then by mid-August, both anxiety and depression had gone up considerably. And not only in Victoria, where the lockdown has been more severe, but also in the rest of Australia. So we are definitely seeing effects on mental health at this point. You know, whether which groups in society are more affected at this point is hard to know. We don't have enough data on it. But you would expect that the big risk factors that people would have are, first of all, have they lost their job? We know that's a big risk factor. If they've had a loss of income or a business or something like that, we know that's a big risk factor. And we also know that social supports are very protective, so people who are socially isolated and don't have those social supports would be more affected as well. So rather than say it's a particular age group, I'd say it's particularly people who might be affected by those known risk factors for mental health problems.
So when it comes to this depression, hopelessness and anxiety, how does that play out in the present COVID reality, you know, with things seeming as grim as they may be to some people? You know, how do you make sure that you're not moving your gauge on how you perceive things too far? You know, is it better to tune out to kind of keep a balance?
Well, the first thing to say is that, you know, these emotional reactions do have a purpose and a potential benefit. Like, anxiety is, in itself is not a bad thing. Anxiety, you know, has evolved across a whole lot of species to protect us from danger, and they can prepare us for action in an emergency. So we are in a potentially dangerous situation, the danger of infection, disease and death. And feeling some anxiety about that will help us protect us from that. Mm. If we weren't worried about it at all, we would take risks and have a greater risk of harm. But then when it gets to the point, with anxiety, it's a matter of too much of a good thing. If you get so much that the person is, you know, afraid to, you know, interact with people in ways that are necessary for their living, if it makes it difficult for them to go outside, if their sleep is severely affected or something like that, and it really is beginning to disrupt their life, then that's where, you know, some action is needed on it. But we shouldn't necessarily see them as a bad thing. The other thing is, it really depends how long all these things are going for. None of us know that. So when people get prolonged exposure to stressful events and anxiety, then they tend to move more into depressive symptoms. And, you know, the concern is if people get, you know, severely depressed, that is the real concern. And we don't know at this point whether there's going to be an increased risk of suicidality as a result of the pandemic. I mean, the early data we have in Australia shows there isn't, that mental health has got worse, but we are not seeing any trend towards more suicide. In New Zealand, where they had a severe lockdown, and on top of it, their suicide rate has actually gone down slightly. And the interesting thing about this is that we know that with suicide in times of war, where it's a war where the whole of society is sort of behind it for a common enemy, and they have a purpose. You know, they call it the Blitz spirit after, you know, the bombing of London and World War II. Where there is that common purpose, actually the suicide rate can go down, even though people are exposed to enormous danger and threat, and their anxiety levels would be going up in that circumstance. It can be protective for suicide, and we just don't know what's going to happen. So we've got these two forces. We've got things like, you know, loss of job, loss of income, loss of social support, or risk factors. And then we have this potential protective factor of, we're all a common enemy, a common purpose, we're working together, which could be quite different. We don't know how that's going to balance out because we don't have any precedents. You know, it's been a century since we had the last big pandemic, and nobody kept data on it then, so we don't know.
Yeah. And you touched on in there, you know, the effects post-COVID and how things are going to turn out after that, with, you know, things like homelessness and unemployment expected as part of a recessionary fallout to the virus. How do we see these things going on once the pandemic is actually over? And what is the impact going to be, in people's best estimation, once we're out the other side of the actual pandemic?
Well, everybody expects at this point in the mental health field there will be a wave of mental ill health that will be a result of the pandemic, and it really depends how we're going to handle it. So with the infection itself, we have basically have two ways of handling it. We have prevention, which are things like, you know, social distancing and masks and washing hands and so on. And then we have increasing the capacity of the health system, which we've done through, you know, getting more ventilators and intensive care beds and so on. And similarly with the wave of mental ill health that is expected, and we didn't seem to be in an early phase of now, you've got two ways. So you can do preventive measures. And the government has done, you know, a lot on this, because I think with JobKeeper, for example, is very important, and JobSeeker, to give people support for businesses, support for people's jobs, to give them income support is very good. You mentioned homelessness. Well, one of the things we've seen is that some homeless people have actually got off the street into accommodation, which is, you know, great. That's what we need to continue. They're all really, really protective things. So it's a matter, I guess, as a society, how far you can keep those protective things going, because they're going to cost a lot of money. You know, maybe we can't keep them going indefinitely. The other thing that's going is people are trying to build up the capacity of the health system. And because, you know, we've got to keep physically distant, what we're seeing in Australia is as a move to telehealth and e-health.
Yeah.
And Australia has actually very good infrastructure in e-mental health treatment systems that are really strong evidence to support them. And, you know, there is widespread availability. So what we need to do is actually to ramp that up and to have people move over from face-to-face services onto these telehealth and e-health services.
Mm.
So I think as a country, we're doing what we can, and how much that's going to ameliorate the potential ill effects long-term is a matter of speculation, because we don't have a precedent where this has been studied before.
Yeah, I mean, I think, as you say, there have been some good strides made, and it's a positive to see things like what's happened in New Zealand in terms of their decline in suicide rates. Tony, thank you so much for joining us on the show today. Your insight has been fantastic.
Pleasure to talk to you.